Good morning. Happy Saturday. You're listening to The Beacon. Welcome to The Beacon. Happy Saturday morning. How are you, Brian?
Surprisingly, I'm doing well.
You are? That's not surprising. You're usually doing pretty well.
Well, we had our first snow, even though it was
just
a sprinkling.
It was nothing.
It was nothing, but still, I was like,
I know. It makes us all nervous that it's coming.
But it makes me nervous.
It's been cold for 2 days. Like, it's mid-December.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, I thought about you this week. I was reading about the wildfires in California.
Again.
Any of your relatives affected by this round?
No. So this is in Southern California, and California is a very big state, so you know, the fires are probably 7 hours from where the Sonoma County fires were.
Ah.
So they're way out of the way. But, I mean, it sounds like it's the exact same type of circumstance where the fires are just, like, coming through and demolishing everything in their path.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, I was looking at pictures and it's like the fires are just burning right along the major expressway from what the pictures look like, right along the major expressways in Los Angeles, and just annihilating everything. I mean, it's, I don't know, we live in a scary world right now.
But, you know, we do have the Awe Factor coming up, a story that will be uplifting.
We do, and I amongst many need it today, so let's look forward to that. We're also speaking with Kim Charlson, who is the president of American Council for the Blind, and Stanley Eichner, who's an attorney for Disability Law Center. He's a director of litigation. And they're suing Hulu over not making their content accessible, their audio description.
Yeah. Then the Illinois State Representative Mark Batenik will be here. State budget and education funding are the topics that he'll be discussing with new contributor Akash Patel.
Cool. And then we'll wrap it up as we usually do with Luke's Laboratory with Juan Soraz. Well, after our commercial break here, we'll hear from Kim and Stanley.
Yep. You are listening to The Beacon, a service of the Chicago Lighthouse on WCPT 820 AM.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Lighthouse Beacon. I am Brett Shishkoff, and today I have Kim Charlson from ACB, and I have Stan Eichner from the Disability Law Center. And they are both joining me today for, we're going to be talking about a class action suit that is being filed on behalf of Kim and the ACB about Hulu and their lack of accessibility that they're offering for the visually impaired and blind. But Kim, before we get that all started, why don't we give a brief introduction of who you are and what you do with the ACB?
Sure. Thanks, Brett. I am the president of the American Council of the Blind, which is a national blindness advocacy organization. We have affiliates in all states and special interest affiliates like guide dog users and braille readers and library users, and those are folks from all over the country. So ACB works on legislation, regulations in Washington, D.C., policy, advocacy if someone's experiencing discrimination, and really just trying to overall make the world a better place for people who are blind or visually impaired to live in and be full participating members of society.
Excellent. I like to hear that. I am definitely a person who is blind and visually impaired, and so I always look for different groups that are fighting on my behalf and the other people like me. So thank you for what you guys do. And Stan, can you give us a little rundown of what the Disability Law Center is and what you do with this organization?
Absolutely. Good morning. My name is Stan Eichner, and I am Director of Litigation at the Disability Law Center. A DLC is what's called the Protection and Advocacy System here in Massachusetts. And that means that we are authorized under federal law to investigate allegations of abuse and neglect and protect and advocate the legal rights of individuals with disabilities.
So for people who aren't exactly sure about what a class action suit is and why it needs to be filed, can you kind of go into a little bit of detail of what a class action suit actually is?
Absolutely. So under federal law, there's a process for bringing a lawsuit which is broader than just the people who are immediately before the court. So in this situation, we have two organizations. One is the national one, the American Council, which is a national advocacy organization, as well as Bay State Council of the Blind, which is a Massachusetts-based organization. And then we have two individuals, Brian and Kim Charlson. And this lawsuit is brought on behalf of the class of people who are adversely affected by the defendant's actions. In this case, Brian, Kim, the American Council, and the Bay State Council are bringing this lawsuit not just for their rights, which are violated, but for all the people who are what is called similarly situated. So it's people across this country who have been denied their right to have equal treatment by this company, Hulu.
Okay. And Kim, since you are the one who is being represented, what exactly are you bringing to this suit as the class action suit against Hulu? What exactly is it that they're not accommodating for the visually impaired mm-hmm. and the blind?
So the American Council of the Blind and myself and my husband, Brian, as individuals, agreed to be part of this case, which is against it's sued against the Hulu. Hulu is a company that provides internet-based streaming of television content, movies, programs from television. These days, services like Netflix and Amazon Video and Hulu, among others, are very popular and becoming more and more popular with society because people want to watch video, movies, television content when they want to watch it. They don't want to be tied to the show comes on at 8 p.m. and I need to be home on my couch sitting in front of the TV and watching it. They want to watch programming when they want to do it. And there's also a trend that people are really into these days called binge watching. Mm-hmm. They want to watch all the season and just start from beginning to end and spend like hours, you know, 3 days watching every episode. So that's very trendy. People are doing that. But with Hulu, the problems begin with actually using the website or using the app that you can use on a mobile device, mm-hmm. that it's really not particularly accessible. It's rather challenging to use. And more importantly, the content that's available that you can stream with Hulu, a lot of that content has audio description. but Hulu is not passing the audio description through to the end user who's blind or visually impaired, who could benefit from that. Now, a couple years ago, the American Council of the Blind also had a settlement agreement with Netflix, and most people know Netflix as one of the major streaming services for movies and television programming. And Netflix was terrific to work with.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a tremendous amount of their streaming content. They're getting more and more with audio description, and they committed to any of their original content that they produce for their network, basically, would also have audio description. Now, Hulu does a much, much smaller percentage of original content. They are really a service that brings together content from all kinds of other networks and makes it available to consumers to watch. So our complaint is, if they're bringing content that's already described by the other network, like ABC or CBS or NBC, that, in fact, they should bring it through with description, and they should also bring the movies that are available on Hulu through with description. When it's available in the movie theater, there's no reason it can't be brought through and streamed through Hulu with audio description. So that is basically the fundamental challenge that we want to correct. We want to make the content and the experience of signing up and using Hulu and their website accessible for people who are blind and visually impaired.
Okay. And the last question I have is, either one of you could answer this. Where are we at in this class action suit, and what does the next steps look like in moving forward?
Well, I think where we are is pretty easy, but I'll let Stan finish that. We just filed lawsuit on November 20th.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's only been approximately 2 weeks since the case was filed in the court. So Stan, what are the next steps, court-wise, legally?
Sure. So the first step in any lawsuit, and the next one in this one, is the other side gets officially served the complaint, the federal complaint. They received a courtesy copy, but there's a formal process for serving them the materials. And then it's the next step is for them, assuming that they choose to continue in a litigation mode, is that they would file an answer that is their response to our the allegations in our complaint. Sometimes defendants will file a motion which will say, we don't think you have a good case, and here's why, and here's what should happen. And that's sort of the way that it goes if it remains in the litigation track. Now, of course, in this lawsuit, as well as any others, there's always a possibility of negotiations, that is, discussions between our side of the lawsuit and the other side. That has not occurred yet, but that could always happen. But if it doesn't, then it proceeds to both people state their positions and papers. The next stage would be what's called discovery, where each side gets to ask information from the other people, and it moves forward until it gets ready to be tried in a federal lawsuit, a trial.
Okay. So then, is there anything that we can do if we're blind, visually impaired, or our family and friends who would like to have their voice heard? Is there anything that we possibly could do, or is it kind of out of our hands at the moment?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I have gotten, emails saying, I support this 100%. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for doing this. Right now, I would say that we just have to kind of wait and let the process work as it will, but hopefully, there will be a time when, I'll be able to come back on your show and say, we settled and Hulu is accessible, and really spread the word and make sure people know that. So that's what, just keep your well wishes and good wishes and fingers crossed, because that's what we want to happen, hopefully not too far down the road, so that we can make this service accessible and people can have access.
Okay.
If I could, just one quick thing.
Sure.
If people such as yourself or others are interested, it's good to know that people all across the country are affected, and so contacting the ACB or the Disability Law Center or our co-counsel in California, the Disability Rights Advocate, it's always good to know that there are people affected by this. Sometimes people on the other side come and say, well, it's just a couple of people. It's not important, or there's not a large number who care. And one of the parts of our action, when you bring a class action, is to show that it affects people on a broad basis, not a small group of people. So we would be perfectly pleased to hear from anyone who says, yes, I too have had this difficulty, or I too believe that this is a problem.
And how could they get a hold of you, Stan, or Kim? Is there, for the ACB, is there contact information of if they wanted to have their voice heard? I guess we can start with Kim.
Sure. They could send an email message to ACB, and that would be info@acb.org. They can visit our website, which is www.acb.org, for more information, or they can call 1-800-424-8666 and just leave that information that they support the Hulu. They haven't been able to use it, or they'd like to, but they've heard it's not accessible. Mm-hmm. And so they're waiting for the accessibility features to be brought into play.
Okay, very good. And Stan?
Mm-hmm. Yes, just quickly, you could contact the Disability Law Center website, which is www.elc-ma.org. And our 800 number is 800-872-9992. And just indicate that you're sharing your thoughts, concerns, input regarding the Hulu litigation. And that will get to me or other staff.
Excellent. I want to thank both of you for joining me on the show. It was great talking to you. And I look forward to seeing hopefully a positive outcome where we do have another streaming service under Hulu that's able to give us some more content, because I know myself, I'm an avid Netflix watcher and I'm starting to get into the Amazon stuff. So it'd be nice to have Hulu added on to that. And I just want to thank you both for working on this for us.
Thank you for your interest and support. We appreciate it.
I am Brett Shishkoff, and you are listening to The Lighthouse Beacon, and we will be right back after this.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul, Computer Information Systems, and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
A Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, that was a fun interview. I enjoyed being able to talk to both Kim and Stan about the class action suit. It was very informative. I know both of us we enjoy our audio description.
You know, even before Netflix and Hulu, you know, there were a lot of audio, there were ways of doing audio description, I should mm-hmm. say, Brett. You know,
yeah.
In fact, I know that you recently went to see A Christmas Carol at the Goodman.
Yes, the Christmas Carol itself had audio description. It has the touch tour. So last week I said I was going to be going mm-hmm. to see A Christmas Carol, and I went on last Sunday, and my family joined me. It was great. They're in their 40th year, so Goodman has it down when it comes to A Christmas Carol, but they always add a little something extra to it. They might change something here and there, but nothing that affects the story.
Sure.
But more of the creative side of things. A part that stuck out to me was the ghost of Marley when he is coming back to try and let Scrooge know that the ghosts are coming. He definitely was a little bit more spookier this year. They had the chains were a little bit longer. They actually end up having a like cash box that was extremely heavy. I was able to feel it during the touch tour. And so you could hear it thunking along when he would be moving towards Scrooge of just the weight of what he was doing in his life and what could potentially happen, if not worse, for Scrooge because he's still alive longer than what Marley would have been.
Right.
And so that part specifically just kind of, you know, gives you a little bit of the chills. They added a little something there with a screen with some, like, specters that were looking at you. And so the audio describer is describing these things as it's going on during this specific scene. So there's, like, these type of parts where last year it wasn't like that, and this year they added a little bit extra something there. And even with the ghosts, there's always something a little bit more that they try and add. For those of you who are planning on going to see it, I don't want to ruin anything else more, but just be prepared that it's not always the same show. If you're doing it for 40 years and people continue to come back, you can't really do the same show every year. And I think the Goodman has figured out a way to still give you what you're expecting with the Christmas Carol, but also being able to just give you enough of a difference as well that it keeps it fresh.
Sure.
And what's amazing to me is this was a sold-out show, so they actually had to add another audio describe performance, which is actually coming up this Wednesday, the 13th, for the 7:30 showing. There won't be a touch tour. Those are pretty difficult to be able to get everybody to come together for it, so they only do one touch tour mm-hmm. per performance, but this is the first time that the Goodman has done a second audio describe performance, and it's just because the popularity of the show. So if you get a chance and you want to go and see it Wednesday night, 7:30, the Goodman, they have another audio describe performance. I definitely highly recommend it. It put me in the Christmas cheer. I am ready for Christmas. It also kind of reminds you to have a little bit more of a giving heart, which is always a good thing at this time of the year, that there's lots of people in need.
Very much.
And so that's definitely a part of this show as well. And the holiday season, I think, also puts us in that giving mood a little bit more than the rest of the year. I hope it extends to other parts of the year. But, yeah, Christmas Carol is good at opening up people's hearts and giving you a little bit of hope, which we all need, especially in the world that we're living in today.
Oh, very much so. I think we all could use some of that hope. And Brett, you know, for our listeners, you actually wrote about your experience at the Goodman on this week's Sandy's View,
mm-hmm.
Which you can find on our website, www.chicagolighthouse.org. And you know, gave us your thoughts, your experiences. And was this your first guest post on the blog, Brett, I know that last week we did the gift ideas.
Yeah, that it was just me, myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was the first time that I actually had, strictly it was my take on something specific. I thank you for allowing me to use your platform to share my experience at this performance. So
we're always looking for new guest bloggers and new experiences. So.
Well, thank you for inviting me to do so. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I know you actually had a pretty interesting experience over the weekend. You went and saw a movie at the theater, and you tried out a new app. Do you care to elaborate a little bit further on this app that you tried out?
Yeah, so I tried ActiView, which is a new app that provides audio description, closed caption, and also sign language interpretation for people who are visually impaired or hearing impaired. And what's nice about this app, Brett, is that you can download it onto your iPhone or iPad or, you know, your mobile device, in other words. And it's very easy to download. Then you create your own account. You know, it's very accessible for those, for blind people using VoiceOver. And it's nice because you pick, right now there's about, I want to say, four or five movies. I went to see Coco, which, you know, is a big hit right now as we speak.
Pixar movie.
Exactly, the Pixar. And, you know, Brett, I've always loved Pixar stuff. You know, I was a huge Finding Nemo, Finding Dory.
Yeah, they just do amazing stuff. It's always fun to go see a Pixar movie, and they're very good at being able to balance the adult humor with the kid humor. So I think it's definitely, anytime you go to see a Pixar movie, you're definitely going to get some fun out of it, no matter what age you are.
And educational, too, you know, because I'm not giving, you know, the whole movie away, but it does have the theme of the Day of the Dead, which, as you know, is celebrated in Mexico and other Latin American countries. And, you know, Brett, you know, I myself am Mexican-American, so I, you know, sort of knew about the Day of the Dead and some of the rituals. But, you know, like a lot of the movie is focused on, like, the traditions that, you know, like the Aztecs had, and, you know, just like the initial Day of the Dead traditions. Mm-hmm. You know, that's stuff that even I hadn't thought of, or, you know, it's certain things that I didn't realize about the different traditions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's something that, number one, I could, you know, sort of relate with because I could identify.
Right.
You know, knowing some of these traditions. But at the same time, it taught me, you know, more about the customs. And, you know, going back to the app, it's very simple to use because in this case, I just, you know, selected the movie Coco, and it gave me the options if I wanted to select the audio description track or the
audio description with the, like, extension for people who are hearing impaired. So
it, it actually offers both, Brett. Yeah. Except, like, you know, it has the audio description, then it has, like, the closed captions, and then it also has amplified audio for people that are hard of hearing. So, in this case, I selected the audio description, and I actually downloaded it before going to the theater just so that, you know, my data wouldn't be, you know,
taken up by the file.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, as you know, it's audio. Those files can be a bit lengthy sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
So, you know, the neat thing about this, Brett, as you know from going to the Goodman and even to other movie theaters, you know, you first have to ask for a headset, you know, to get that audio description. And I know that some of the theaters are, you know, it's slowly becoming available in more theaters. But the neat thing about this is that, you know, I could go into the movie theater, get my tickets, my popcorn. I went with my mom. And so, you know, we were able to just, you know, get in, get settled. And when it came time for the movie, I opened up the app, and the audio, using the microphone, the audio got synced, you know, along with the movie or whatever. So the microphone, it picked up, like, what part of the movie I was in, and it started describing, you know, at that scene. So there's no, like, you know, I didn't have to take, like, any extra steps to configure it or whatever. And this is something that, you know, not only works at the theaters, but also, like, if they're, if a movie is available on DVD, you can also use it at home. But moving on, Brett, a very interesting interview for us this week, as always. And why don't we take a listen?
I'm Akash Patel. I'm joined today by Illinois Republican State Representative Mark Badenik of Plainfield. He was first elected to the Illinois House of Representatives on November 4th, 2014. He serves as a member of the Illinois House Business and Occupational Licenses, Business Incentives for Local Communities, and also the Audit Commission, and he also sits on the Personnel and Pensions Committees, and he's also a member of the Audit Commission. He joins us today from Mississippi. Representative Badenik, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You have been in the legislature for 3 years. What have you learned during your 3 years in Springfield or in the legislature?
I would say that there's a two things. One, I think that there's a gross lack of overall accountability at all levels down there, and frankly, I just wish that there'd be less time spent on politics and a little bit more time spent on policy. It seems like since the day I set foot in the General Assembly, you know, everybody was focusing on keeping their seat, getting their next seat, and not worried about doing the best job for the seat that they currently held. So those are probably the two things that I would say I've kind of learned since being down there.
You, by profession, are a commercial real estate broker. What companies are you the owner of?
So I have, it's actually my in-law's family where I hold my license, but it's a REMAX, and I do a commercial division on REMAX. And then I do have a contracting company as well that I own.
How does your business experience relate to the committee work you're doing in the legislature as it relates to business incentives for the community and things like that?
Sure. You know, I would say that being a commercial realtor really gives you insight into the local economy. So my clients are mostly what I would call mom and pop type businesses. And I know in my district and in the general area are people expanding? Are people contracting? Are they hiring people? Are they moving out of state? Why are they moving out of state? When you're making real estate decisions regarding your business, you're looking at their books, you're looking at their financials, and you have a real good read on how things are going in the area. So when I hear that a business is moving out of state because of work comp costs and property taxes,
sure,
and they compare it to the state that they're moving to, you have firsthand insight as to what's happening. And then same thing when things are going well, if a restaurant's doing well, or if a transportation company is doing well, like you know, many are in my area, I have firsthand knowledge of what's happening and why.
Let's discuss the state budget. Illinois had a budget standoff for 2.5 years, but we finally have one. It provides funding for higher education institutions, such as community colleges and four-year schools, as well as funding for social service providers who provide services for people who are elderly and also people with very severe diverse abilities who need 24-hour home care, not just when they are children, but also when they get older and become adults. How severely impacted has this standoff been for this group of people?
It's been huge, and there's a couple of reasons. You know, one of the difficulties was that social service and higher education were kind of put on the back burner because we didn't have appropriations for that when other things were being paid. The other part is those organizations aren't eligible for late payment penalties. So one of the worst things I can tell you in business, you know, there's a lot of things that are bad. Probably the worst thing is uncertainty. And we gave them 2 years of uncertainty. And if you don't know when you're going to get money from the state, do you sign that next contract? Do you sign the lease? Do you hire somebody? Do you draw on a line of credit? Well, if you draw on a line of credit, well, then you're paying interest. If you're paying interest, that money then isn't going to the services that you're supposed to be providing. So it was horrendous. It was one of the reasons why I was one of the few Republicans that voted for a bill that allowed for the late payment penalty, the interest, late payment interest, to go to some of the social services that weren't eligible for it. So it was a big negative.
I would imagine that you have constituents who've been severely impacted by this. What is the one thing you heard from your constituents?
Just the uncertainty. I mean, that's really the biggest thing. Even when I was talking to the providers, they're like, look, you're going to cut me, but tell me how much you're going to cut me. It was more of a situation where they said, look, I'd rather take 95 cents right now than you promise me a dollar that I may or may not get 2 years from now. Because when you drag things out and there's uncertainty, it increases costs.
Sure.
And the certainty allows you to be more efficient.
I'm Akash Patel here in Chicago. We're talking about the state budget and more with Plainfield Republican State Representative Mark Badenick. I want to switch now to the education funding bill, reform bill. As I understand, the bill was designed to fix the funding formula in reference to how much funding each of the 850 school districts get. What impact does this have on students with disabilities?
Well, I think one of the things that it really does is it kind of levels the playing field. So from the state level, we were one of the lowest states from state-provided funding for education. And the idea is that to try to not have rich districts and poor districts and try to level that out a little bit. So there's certainly going to be more funding for most of the new funding goes to the poor school districts, which will have a direct effect into what you're referring to, but it'll also have the effect of lowering property tax rates in those areas, which could hopefully help spur some economic growth, which will also then help with local funding for education. So the idea was to make sure that every child in the state had adequate funding for education.
Will they still be able to have access to the special education services that school districts are required to provide for students, which is mandated by ADA and IDEA?
Yeah, and I know there was some back and forth on this. My understanding is you know, there is some, we're going to have to, the school districts do have some flexibility there. You're going to have to count on the local people to make sure that that's spent appropriately. But my understanding is that there's the same amount, if not more, funds to provide the necessary resources for those students.
What were you hearing from school superintendents in your district as it relates to the education funding reform bill?
Well, you know, I mean, I didn't think it was a perfect bill. I thought it was one of those 60-40 bills. I supported it. But certainly the superintendents in my district strongly supported the bill.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. It was going to be, how did you vote and why did you vote the way you voted? But I think you answered my next question.
I supported the bill. I'm also supportive of the $75 million tax credit for some of the poorest kids. And, you know, if you're stuck in a school that's failed for decades in an area and you have an ability, a very small amount, I think it's 0.01% of the education budget for those kids in those areas to maybe go to a private school with an opportunity scholarship, I thought that was certainly worth a try.
Let's discuss the key hearings you had as a member of the Audit Commission. Would you like to tell us first what the Audit Commission is and what it does?
Well, what the Audit Commission does is it reviews all the audits that the Auditor General does of all the state agencies. And, you know, we review them and approve them. And basically we find out if agencies are following the law or if things are being done efficiently. And we had a couple of Audit Commission sessions during veto session, and a couple of disturbing things came up. The first one is the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, which was a big scandal under the Quinn administration. They actually moved it to another organization, and we audited the second organization that handled the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, which was a bunch of money spent for anti-violence funds. And the disturbing thing to me was we still had mismanagement again the second time. So that was during the first week of veto session. The second week of veto session, one of the groups we were reviewing the audit for was for the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. And it turned out to me that our EDGE credit program hadn't been, there's a report for our EDGE credits, which are our credits given to businesses to bring jobs to the state, and we haven't done a report on its effectiveness since 2005. And those are billions of dollars of tax credits, and we need to know whether they're worth it or not. And I've always questioned the value of edge credits because it always seems to be a lot of money going to big corporations with very little return in terms of the number of jobs they actually provide. And the fact that we haven't done a report in over a decade, I think, is quite disturbing.
My next question was going to be, what topics did you hold hearings on?
Yeah, those were the ones. So,
okay.
NRI was the big one. ICJIA, which stands for the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, was actually the board that handled the NRI funds. And then we had DCEO, which is Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. And then we also had Southern Illinois. And Southern Illinois had a pretty good audit. You know, we do these audits all the time, and we should. And they're usually not really bad. When you have an organization that has billions and billions of dollars and all kinds of regulations, you know, everything isn't going to be done 100% perfectly. But by and large, when you look at the audits, there's not a whole bunch of significant problems that you see, but we do see some big ones like the ones I mentioned earlier.
As I noted, you also are a member of the Business Incentives for Local Communities and also Business and Occupational Licensing Committees. What's the difference between the two?
So Business and Occupational Licensing literally handles a lot of the licenses that departments like the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation has, whether it be appraisal licenses, real estate licenses, you need licenses if you're cutting hair, things like that. The other committee, the Business Incentives Committee, deals with tax incentives to bring businesses in. So that committee does not need as much. However, there was one particular bill that I worked hard to override the governor's veto that went through that committee, and that was Will Davis's, I believe it's HB 1797, which was some debt forgiveness for a port authority on the south side of Chicago. Those are the sorts of things that are handled in that committee.
I take it that banking is also what the Business and Occupational Licensing Committee oversees, correct?
Yeah, no, not a lot of banking. That's probably finance and institutions. There's a Financial Institutions Committee. So we don't see a lot of banking regulation in that particular committee.
But that's the financial institution, that's a standing committee, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What hearings will the committees be holding in the coming months ahead before the veto session is over?
Well, the veto session is now over, so we just got our schedule. We don't go back till the end of January, and we'll start all over. So depends what kind of new bills people file and where we go from there. I know the sexual harassment training and task force and those issues will probably go before my Personnel and Pensions Committee. We dealt with those during the veto session. Other than that, I'll be as surprised as you.
Well, I'll stay tuned for that because I'm a political junkie. Let's discuss the Illinois Republican gubernatorial nomination. You have Governor Rahner running for re-election, but he's being challenged by your colleague from Wheaton, Jeannie Ives. Will you endorse either Governor Rahner or Representative Ives?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Before I make any statements on that, I'll wait to see if everybody who says they're running actually ends up running.
Do you believe Governor Rahner is vulnerable come next year?
You know, I think any politician should consider themselves vulnerable. So, you know, I think we have 118 seats in the House, 59 in the Senate, and one in the governorship, and you know, some other seats that are up. And I would say that we're all vulnerable. We should always be look at it that way. You know, a year is a long time in politics, and you don't know how things are going to change or turn. And you should always be looking over your shoulder, making sure you're doing what's best for the taxpayers. Keep your head down, and that's what I do. And that's what I would suggest everybody else does.
Mark Badenick is the Republican state representative from Plainfield. Representative, thanks so much for your time and for a good, robust discussion. And I hope you will come back and come on again soon.
Anytime. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Beacon, the Lighthouse Beacon. Here we are. Lainey Kleeman's here. Brian
Hi.
Hawkins there. And you know, Lainey.
What?
You have a strange talent that I bet you weren't aware of.
Oh, my gosh. I love when you do this. What's my strange talent?
Well, you remember the last segment that we did not too long ago, Let Us Entertain...
Let you could never get that right.
Well, it's been a while.
It has. It's been a few weeks here.
Let Us Entertain... No. Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
Yes.
Okay, well, Let Us Turn Up the Beat was the name also of another concern. I think it was some sort of... a store or something like that, but they had t-shirts and everything else. So,
okay.
But once again, with the Off Factor, you have named your segment after something else that came previously. And this one is different, though. You don't have to worry, because
okay.
the Off Factor was previously a horse, a quarter horse.
That was the name of the horse, the
yes.
Off Factor?
Yes.
So cool.
And so it was a horse that... It had 19 starts. It won one race, came in second four times, third once, and over its lifetime, it earned $15,330.
Wow, that doesn't sound like a very successful horse.
Well, it was the jockey was Pedro Chavarria Espinosa, trained by Fructosio
Uiton. Wow, you are a bundle of knowledge over there about this horse.
And it was owned by Itzel Alcala Perez, and the breeder was Narciso Flores, which is probably the easiest name. I know I butchered all those names. Excuse me, folks. But
more information than I ever thought I would have about a horse named the Off Factor.
Yeah, so now, you know, maybe that's something that you can keep in mind if we ever change segments again. So, ladies and gentlemen, Lainey Kleeman with the Off Factor.
Thanks, Brian. Coming into Christmas, yes, here we go, round in the corner. So we're going to talk about a nice Christmas story.
Okay.
Families wake up to find that someone paid for their family's Christmas toys. And you hear stories like this, you know, kind of around the holidays, but it always makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, knowing that people are taking care of others. But a woman named Desiree Williams had $600 worth of toys for her two young children on layaway at a Walmart. And her husband had passed away in April suddenly. Mm. So this is her first Christmas as a widow, and her children, she has two kids. It's her children's first Christmas without their dad. And so she had these toys on layaway, was trying to figure out what to not get so she could actually afford the toys for her kids. She says it's been very stressful with a single income. So at least six families received an email that a Good Samaritan footed the bill for their layaways. A person had visited the Walmart and paid off a quarter of the layaways in the store. The person, of course, wished to remain anonymous and did not want to publicize the exact amount given toward paying off the layaways. But the person covered at least six people's layaways, including Williams. It was totaling at least $930, according to a Facebook post in a local group. And there is actually a string of secret Santas that are paying off layaways. Last week, a man picked up the tab of 62 layaways at a Toys R Us, totaling $10,780.
Wow.
Could you imagine? I just think that's, when you have those resources, I really appreciate when you use them to help others who, you know, who just really appreciate it and really appreciate it. So Miss Desiree Williams says that she is actually now trying to, she's going to take some of the toys that she had paid for her, and she's going to adopt a child, you know, that do one of the adopt a child programs for children who don't have money for a nice Christmas. And she's going to donate some of the toys from her layaway to another child for Christmas. And she says, it's only right for me to pay it forward and be selfless also. And I love this quote, one person can make a difference, multiple people can make a change. And that's what this person did for me. So I just thought that was really nice that, you know, somebody, there's so much good in the world. There's good Samaritans out there who just out of the kindness of their heart walk into a Walmart or a Toys R Us and just say, you know what? Clearly, if things are on layaway, then somebody can't afford them right away. You know, that's why layaway exists. And to be able to just take that burden off of somebody, I think, is a really nice thing to be able to do. So,
well, that makes the grade. It has that awe factor.
The awe factor.
Yes.
So there you go. Our awe factor for today. That wraps up our segment for now, and we'll be back with Luke's Laboratory right after this.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things, because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
I'm Juan Suarez, and with me again is Mr. Luke Scrubbin and Luke's Laboratory. Good morning, Luke.
Hey, how's it going?
And what are we talking about this week, Luke?
Well, I'm still recovering from my 2.5-week vacation in the UK I've just returned from, so hopefully my brain will operate long enough for me to get through today's topic, which is going to be update to some popular assistive technologies that we have.
Oh, so that's where you were partying with the Royals.
Partying with the Royals. We had a great time. We ate lots of crumpets and drank lots of tea. And, generally had a wonderful time.
All right.
I've got a couple of updates here. So, first of all, an update on eSight. Now, for people who can't remember or don't know what eSight is, eSight is an electronic pair of glasses, basically. It's one of these wearable devices which are very popular at the moment, and it works very well for people with central vision loss. And basically, if you imagine a visor, and that's kind of what it's like. It's a visor. There's video screens on the inside. There's a camera on the outside. And whatever you point your head toward, you see in the video screens, and you can enlarge it and increase the contrast of it and change the color of it and things like that. So you can use those glasses for reading, for watching television, for seeing things in the distance, looking at people's faces, looking at art in the art museum, all sorts of different things. So a very cool device. And now it's even cooler because they've just added a new feature, which is optical character recognition. And for those of you who aren't in the know about optical character recognition, well, it's a process whereby you can basically take a picture of a page of printed text and have it read aloud to you. And so now, while you're wearing your eSight, and let's say that you're reading a something that you've been given, a newspaper or a sheet of paper with some text on it, or whatever it might be. Now, if your eyes get tired from reading, you can actually have the device take a picture and read the text aloud to you.
Oh, that is cool.
That is awesome. So
this
is one of the things we've been seeing in assistive technology, where they're trying to merge all these different ideas all into one kind of multi-purpose device. So that's the way things have been going, and eSight is definitely moving in that direction. But if you want to come and check out eSight, then you can give me a call to make an appointment, and I can be reached at 312-997-3649.
Once again, and it's time for this week's
Customers of the Week. I wanted to talk about a bunch of different people today, and those are people who have been flocking to our website, our e-commerce store, to buy our Chicago Lighthouse-made fashion clocks, as we like to call them. And so over the last week or so, we have had an inundation of people looking to buy these fashion clocks. And what they are is we have a clock factory here at the Chicago Lighthouse. People with a visual impairment put together clocks. And I think I'm right in saying that we're the largest clock manufacturer in the US at this point. So it's a pretty substantial operation. And we have recently released a line of fashion clocks. And the most popular ones have been a clock with a picture of the Chicago CTA map on the clock face, a clock with a picture of the Hancock Tower on the clock face, and a clock with the Chicago City flag on the clock face. And you can see them either by going to our main website, chicagolighthouse.org, and navigating to the shop section, or you can go directly to the shop by going to lighthousetoolsforliving.com, and that will take you directly to our website. And we have a lovely new holiday banner that we just put up, and if you click on the holiday banner, it will be the first thing you see when you go to the website, and that will take you to a bunch of different gift ideas that we've put up for the holidays, including those clocks and a number of other things. And we do have a sale on some of the technology as well, so please go and check it out.
All right, and I'm Juan Suarez, and this has been another edition of Luke's Laboratory.
Well, that's going to do it for us today.
That's it.
That's it. Thank you very much to Brett and Sandy for their contributions to our show. We will see you all back here, same time, same place next week. Have a great week.